Recording for The Talking Place.
Legendary broadcaster Charlie Evers started his program June 11th, 2014, the second day the station was...
Good afternoon, this is Pastor Craig here for Study His Word. And a little slow on the computer controls there, but, you know, it happens sometimes. Well, we're going to take a little bit of a downshift from that last hour, maybe be a little more calm. And what I wanted to do today, I don't have a guest, but I wanted to kind of take a deep dive into the story of Noah's Ark. Now, I think probably just about everybody is familiar with the story of the Great Flood and Noah's Ark. But one of the things that I've become aware of over the years as I've engaged with people is that for as familiar with it as people are, there's a lot of misunderstanding and a lot of the details get missed. And so what I thought we would do today is we're going to go through the story of Noah and his ark. And there are several things that I would like to point out, because when we look at the details of it, it'll answer a lot of questions or a lot of confusions or a lot of misunderstanding that people have. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read it, but I'm going to make comments on it as we go along. So in other words, I'm not going to read it from beginning to end and then go back and comment it, but we're going to just start reading it. And then as these things come up, we'll cover it. So it's starting in Genesis in chapter 6, and I'm going to start at verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. So in other words, man was evil and the thoughts of his heart were continually evil. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man who I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. Now I want to stop right there. It says, Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Now, we know that there is no human being that is perfect. We are all imperfect. We all are sinners, and nobody is perfect. But what this says here is, Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. So what we have here is a situation where Noah walked with God. Noah was following God as best as he could. And in comparison to the people around him, or that his generations, in comparison to those people around him, Noah stood out. Stood out among the people. So that's what it means, perfect in his generations. And Noah begot three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth. Make yourself an ark of gopher wood. make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and outside with pitch. And this is how you shall make it. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, its width 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits. Now, first of all, what's a cubit? A cubit was a measure, a system of measurement in that they would measure from the tip of their finger to their elbow, and it would be approximately 18 inches. Now, I have seen where they have, talk where a cubit was standardized at 24 inches. Some people say it was 18 inches, but the key is there was the standard of measurement, and generally most people agree that it was approximately 18 inches. So you can take that 18 inches and factor in, the length of being 300 and the width 50 and the height 30, and you can do the math and you can get the dimensions of the ark. It is interesting to note that the proportions or the ratios of length to height and to width that are laid out here is generally the proportions or the ratios that have been used throughout shipbuilding history. And I don't mean to imply that, when we were building ships, 200 years ago, that we referred to the Bible to get our measurements. But what it reflects is that as we got better and better at shipbuilding, and we learned what ratios and proportions worked the best, this is what they turn out to be. So that was essentially like the blueprint for building an efficient seagoing ship. All right, going back to verse 16. You shall make a window for the ark, and you shall finish it to a cubit from above, and set the door of the ark in its side. You shall make it with a lower, a second, and a third decks. And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die. Now, what's interesting is at this time, this concept of him bringing floodwaters would be foreign to Noah and to anybody else, because up until this time there was no rain on earth. From the creation until the flood, it never rained on earth. How the earth operated at this time was there were vast amounts of water in the earth, and everything was watered from the ground up, from water that was in the ground that would seep up, and that water that would go up and form a mist sort of around vegetation. So this whole concept of floodwaters was new to them. Verse 18, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. So there were a total of 8 people that went into the ark. That would have been Noah, his wife, their 3 sons, and the 3 sons' wives. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring 2 of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds after their kind, of animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing of the earth after its kind, 2 of every kind will come to you to keep them alive. And you shall take for yourself of all food that is eaten, and you shall gather it to yourself, and it shall be food for them. Now, this is typically what most people are familiar with, the 2 of every kind. And, you know, you'll see artist pictures of Noah's Ark, and there'll be, you know, the animals will be marching up to the Ark, and there'll be two giraffes, and there will be two elephants, and, you know, things like that. And we'll see here in a minute that this is really not an accurate depiction of Noah's Ark. Now, let me explain something. This, in chapter 6, this is an overview of the story of Noah's Ark. Then when we get into verse 7, it's going to become a more detailed, and that's where we'll see some things in the detail which will answer some questions and point out some things that maybe we didn't know or didn't understand. And this is typical in Genesis, that you'll see first a story and then a more detailed story, and on the surface it'll appear that there are maybe contradictions between one story and the other. But actually there are not contradictions. What we're getting is we're getting a more detailed description. We go back to the first few chapters in Genesis, and there are some discussions about the creation story and then the creation of man. And again, people sometimes want to point out things that seem to contradict. But again, it's, you're given an overall picture, kind of a general description, and then you're told the story again, and it's in much more detail. So, thus Noah did according to all that God had commanded him, so he did. So, then the Lord said to Noah, so kind of back up a little bit, and now we're getting into the more detailed version. Then Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, and you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. You shall take with you seven each of every clean animal, a male and his female, two each of animals that are unclean, a male and his female. So here again, now, this is where people say, well, wait a minute. It just said earlier that take two of each. Now it's saying some you're taking two and some you're taking seven. This is why I say it starts out with a general overall picture. Now we're getting to the details. And notice something. He says, you shall take with you seven each of every clean animal, a male and his female. So what that's saying is you are going to take seven male and seven females. Okay, so what you're taking is seven pairs. It's because if you only had seven of an animal, you would have three males, three females, and then you'd have a seventh one, which you're either going to have a male or a female, and that serves no purpose because that one can't reproduce and repopulate the earth. So it's seven actual pairs of a male and a female of the clean animals, and then two pairs each that are unclean, a male and his female. Also seven each of the birds of the air, male and female, to keep the species alive on the face of all the earth. For after seven more days, I will cause it to rain on the earth 40 days and 40 nights, and I will destroy from the face of the earth all living things that I have made. And that's why I say, you know, he's... This is going to be the first time it rains. We'll see what happens here in the future. In a little bit, we'll see. And Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded him. Noah was 600 years old when the flood waters were on the earth. And let me just stop there and side note and say, you know, people say, this can't be true. You know, Noah couldn't have been that old. Nobody lives to 600 years. And so, you know, it's just a story. Well, understand something, that the life expectancy in the early generations of man were a lot longer than they are today. The human genes started out perfect, uncorrupted, and then over time they've become more and more and more corrupted, so that early on you didn't have all the diseases that we have today. And quite honestly, you didn't have a lot of the health problems that we had today because the people in these early generations ate a proper diet. You know, God created the animals and vegetables for our benefit. And everything we need, all the nutrients and amino acids and antioxidants, are available to us in our foods. But since over the years we have strayed away from a lot of the proper diet, we have increased the amount of disease and increased the amount of health problems. So you can have faith or trust in the fact that the early generations on this earth did live for hundreds of years. So that's that. So Noah, with his sons, his wife, and his sons' wives, went into the ark because of the flood. Of clean animals, of animals that are unclean, of birds and everything that creeps on the earth, two by two they went into the ark to Noah, male and female, as God had commanded to Noah. Now, you know, lots of times people say, how in the world could Noah, you know, round up all the animals? Well, he didn't have to round up any of those animals. God sent them to him. You know, I've often said that the original GPS were put into animals at creation. You know, he caused these animals to come to Noah. He selected out the pairs and sent them to Noah. It's no different than even today. How does a monarch butterfly know to fly thousands of miles every year? They have an internal GPS. How do hummingbirds know to fly thousands of miles every year? They come up north. They come up north in the summer and they fly south in the winter, and they constantly do this, and they've done this for hundreds of years, thousands of years. They have, you know, for lack of a better word, they have an instinct of what they do to survive, and the best way of describing that instinct that was given to them was that they've got a natural GPS. I mean, and think about it, the birds and the butterflies and animals that do that, they don't even think about what it is they're doing. They just do it. They know that that's what they do, and they don't have to think about it. Also, too, I'd like to say that people have questioned how Noah could possibly get that many animals on the ark. And I'm not going to bore you with the details, but they've done the math, they've studied it, and the proportions are more than adequate to fit all these animals in. Noah did not take a pair of Dalmatians and a pair of Schnauzers and a pair of Dobermans. He was given the breeding pairs of the dog family or the canine family. And from that, you get your wolves and you get your coyotes and you get your domestic dogs. So what you had is a representation of the animal families. And so when you do this, you actually would see that the vast majority of the animals that he had on the ark were actually small. I mean, you know, you would have your representatives from the rodents, you know, mice, that type of thing. So they're going to be very small. There would not be that many large animals. I'm sure there's the exceptions of, you know, like the elephants and the giraffes and that type of thing. But by and large, the vast majority of the animals that went on the ark would be rather small. So he had no problem fitting them in. All right. And it came to pass after 7 days that the waters of the flood were on the earth. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened. So the majority of the water that flooded the earth came from underneath. The fountains of the great deep were broken up. That's the caverns that were in the earth that were broken open and released their water. Then that, in combination with the rain, was the flood. But the vast majority of the water came from within the earth. And the rain was on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On that very same day, Noah and Noah's sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and Noah's wife and the three wives of his sons with them entered the ark. They and every beast after its kind, all cattle after their kind, every creeping thing that creeps on the earth after its kind, and every bird after its kind, every bird of every sort. And they went into the ark two by two, all of all flesh in which is the breath of life. So those that entered, male and female of all flesh, went in as God had commanded him, and the Lord shut him in. Now the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and lifted up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. The waters prevailed and greatly increased on the earth, and the ark moved about on the surface of the waters. And the waters prevailed exceedingly on the earth, and all the high hills under the whole heaven were covered. The waters prevailed 15 cubits upward, and the mountains were covered. And all the flesh died that moved on the earth, birds and cattle and beasts and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and every man. All in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life, all that was on dry land died. So he destroyed all living things which were on the face of the ground, both man and cattle, creeping things and birds of the air. They were destroyed from the earth. Only Noah and those who were with him in the ark remained alive. Now, you know, it's interesting because last hour, I believe, Scott asked me if I believed in the story of Noah's Ark literally or figuratively. In other words, did I take the story literally, or did I see it as a figurative story? And my answer, of course, was literal. And I want to address that from a couple of different angles. First of all, yes, I take it literal because I believe that everything in the Bible is true. Now, one has to be careful when one says, yes, I take the Bible literally, because not everything in the Bible is written from a literal sense. There are prophecies for the future in which allegories are used. For instance, the book of Revelation. You know that it's not a literal description because there will be lots of things in Revelation where it says it had the appearance like that of. Or, you know, we say things, you know, there are things in the Bible where it says everybody was destroyed. But then later it'll talk about a few people that survived. So in that sense, it's like when I say, I went to a concert and everybody was there. Well, not everybody was there, but it's kind of a statement to emphasize the fact that there was a lot of people there. So Do I take everything literally? No. I take everything in the way that it's written. The historical accounts are accounts that I can count on as being true. The things that are written in a poetic form, they have to be read poetically. Things like, for instance, in Proverbs, where he said, you know, they say, if you, you know, raise up your children right, and they will not depart from the ways of the Lord. Well, those are general principles. It's not 100% true. But if you, but you understand when you're reading Proverbs what type of writing it is. It is a writing about general principles. If you do this, this will be the outcome. If you do this, this will be the outcome. So my answer to that question was, yes, this is a historical account. And do I believe that the way that the account is written is accurate and true? Yes, I do. If you go to the Grand Canyon, you don't even have to go to the Grand Canyon. If you learn about the Grand Canyon in school, they will tell you the Grand Canyon was created over millions of years. The Colorado River carved it out over millions and millions of years. But what's interesting is most geologists who study the Grand Canyon, and this includes both Christians and non-Christians, this includes secular geologists who know what they're talking about, will tell you that the Grand Canyon was not carved out by the Colorado River over millions and millions of years. But what they will tell you is they will tell you, looking at the evidence of the way that it is eroded and the fossils that are intact and all this kind of stuff, that it was created by a sudden catastrophe. Now, you know, a lot of the secular geologists won't go as far as to say Noah's flood or the great flood caused by God, but they will tell you that it was a catastrophic event. And there are actually three other places around the globe where we have that evidence of a catastrophic event, a sudden and massive flood. So the evidence is there that it happened, and it's worldwide, because that's the other thing that quite often comes up in this debate is, well, this is just a story that is about a localized flood. You know, the whole world wasn't flooded, but it was like, it was just a really bad local flood. Well, the evidence for a worldwide great flood is there. So I just wanted to answer a couple those types of questions, because that's the most common things that you hear being brought up about the flood. All right, and the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. Then God remembered Noah. Now, I just want to say something. It doesn't mean that God forgot about Noah. You know, God wasn't sitting up there going, oh, man, I left Noah out there on all that water for half a year. No. It says, then God remembered Noah is just a way of stating that, you know, he has Noah in his mind at all time, and so now he's going to do something about it. Then God remembered Noah and every living thing and all the animals that were with him in the ark, and God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters subside. So that's the language of saying that at the determined time, when the time was right, then God sent this wind. The fountains of the deep and the windows of heaven were also stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters receded continually from the earth. At the end of the 150 days, the waters decreased. Then the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. Now, there is a mountain in Turkey that is commonly called Ararat, that there have been many, many expeditions there for to find evidence of Noah's Ark. And it kind of like a Raiders of the Lost Ark type of thing. I mean, there have been some big expeditions go there and looking for it. And of course, they've never found it. And I don't think they will ever find it. You got to remember that the ark was built out of gopher wood. So the chances of wood surviving to the point where we could find it today, don't think it's going to happen. The other thing that I might point out is it says the ark rested in the seventh month, the 17th day of the month, on the mountains of Ararat. It doesn't say that it rested on Mount Ararat or the mountain Ararat. It's on the mountains of Ararat. There are a lot of mountains in that region. So we don't even know which particular mountain the ark rested on. So are we going to find it? Probably not. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month, on the first day of the month, the tops of the mountains were seen. So it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. Then he sent out a raven, which kept going to and fro until the waters had dried up from the earth. He also sent out from himself a dove, to see if the waters had receded from the face of the ground. But the dove found no resting place for the sole of her feet, and she returned into the ark to him, for the waters were still on the face of the whole earth. So he put out his hand and took her and drew her into the ark to himself. And he waited yet another 7 days, and again he sent the dove out from the ark. Then the dove came to him in the evening, and behold, a freshly plucked olive leaf was in her mouth. And Noah knew that the waters had receded from the earth. So he waited yet another 7 days and sent out the dove, which did not return again to him anymore. So that was kind of like his way of finding out when would be the right time that they could leave the ark. And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, that the waters were dried up from the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and indeed, the surface of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dried. Then God spoke to Noah, saying, "Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh that is with you, birds and cattle, and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, and so that they may abound on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth." And one of the things that, you know, the dove brought back a olive branch, but then they still waited for a time inside the ark. This would, of course, given the earth a chance to, you know, for all different kind of vegetation to come up again and get started again and get a good start on growing, so that then they could come out of the ark. Let's see. Bring out with you every living thing of all flesh. I probably read that. that creeps on the earth, so they may abound on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth. So Noah went out, and his sons and his wife and his sons' wives with him. Every animal, every creeping thing, every bird, and whatever creeps on the earth, according to their families, went out of the ark. So Noah's coming out of the ark. They're letting the animals, you know, out of the ark. And again, they would have, I'm sure, had their GPSs working so that the animals would instinctively know once they left the ark where were they to go. It's not like the animals were all hanging around at the ark going, you know, now where do we do? You know, they knew where to go so that they could multiply and replenish the earth. All right. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the idol or on the altar. And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma. Then the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his mouth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. So Noah took of every clean animal and of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So this goes back to the beginning of the story when we looked at the details and he took seven pairs of every clean animal and two pairs of every clean animal. And what was the purpose in the difference of numbers? The purpose was for he took seven pairs versus two of the clean animals so that he would have animals to use as burnt offerings on the altar and also to provide food for Noah and his family once they were back on earth and living on earth. They would need food, and so that's why you had seven pairs of clean animals and only two of unclean. The two pairs of unclean, obviously they were there to repopulate themselves and replenish the earth, but it was not necessary for them, any of them that were going to be offered as burnt offerings, and there weren't going to be any that were going to be used for food. So that's why you have the difference in the numbers. And I know sometimes it may seem kind of strange that these are being, you know, you burn an offering on the altar. That is just the way, you know, in God's order things were done. That was a recognition of God's creation, and by offering it back to him, as the Bible says here, it is a sweet aroma in God's nostrils. Let's see. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. This is reinforcing his never again to destroy every living thing as he had done. So God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the air, on every bird of the earth, and on every bird of the air, and on all that move on the earth, and on all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hand. So he says, the fear of you shall be put into all these animals. And if you think about it, what happens when you encounter an animal? It usually runs from you. It may stay away from people in the first place. So God put a natural fear in animals for man. Now, I know there are some exceptions. You know, people get eaten by bears. People get, you know, but most of the time, when people get attacked by an animal, it's because the animal has an extreme fear of it being threatened. And so there are times when they will attack as opposed to run. But it's their first instinct is to run. I mean, you stop and think about it. You know, animals that sometimes get eaten by people, generally, they will run from you. I mean, you will scare a bear off more times than the bear's going to eat you. Okay, so back in verse 3. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. I have given you all things, even as green herbs. And this is a point that, see, this is the first time that all animals were available as food. Prior to this, from the point of creation, we were strictly vegetarians. All the food that we ate came from the trees and bushes and shrubs and vines, that type of thing. We were strictly vegetarian. But from this point forward, he says, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. I have given you all things, even as the green herbs. So now it's okay for man to eat things. But you shall eat not flesh with its life, that is, its blood. So the exception to that is that Noah was commanded not to eat flesh or an animal that still had blood in it. That's why when we kill animals, we, you know, drain the blood out of them. And then let's see, surely for your lifehood I will demand a reckoning from the hand of every beast I will require it, and from the hand of man, from the hand of every man's brother I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man. And as for you, be fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly into the earth and multiply it. So this is actually the first time where God sets down the law as far as relationships to man. And it's whoever sheds man's blood, by his blood shall be shed. So in other words, in Exodus it gets into more detail about it, but basically it's the shedding of innocent blood, then that's when your blood is required. That is government's justification for capital punishment, because when you shed innocent man's blood, your life is required for that. And basically, it's all it is, you know, government having been given God's authority. And, you know, there's plenty of scripture for that about God instituting governments and giving them authority. But basically, it's God has given civil governments the authority to shed a person's blood in instances where that person is guilty of shedding innocent blood. And I'm going to leave it at that, because we could get off on a whole bunch of tangents about warfare and capital punishment and abortion and things like that. But in today's, I don't have the time to go into any of that. But mainly I just wanted to, for us to take a deeper look into the story of Noah's Ark, because I know there's a lot of questions about it. And again, a lot of it comes from knowing the general story, but not knowing the details. So maybe, hopefully, possibly, may have cleared up some questions for you today. May have answered some of the confusion that maybe some of you had. So that's that. So I have not in the past really talked too much about this. But I do want to say that I do have a weekly podcast, and in which on that podcast I put up a new episode every Wednesday. Every Wednesday morning, a new episode goes up on the podcast, and it's real easy to find. It's studyhiswordradio.org. Again, that's studyhiswordradio.org. It's all lowercase, as is typical with websites, and it's all strung together. You already know that. And you can access that, and you can see my new episode that I have every Wednesday, and it makes every episode available. So when I started the podcast in June of this year, I believe it was June 9th, that very first one is there. Now, obviously, the most recent one goes on top. So moving backwards, moving down through the list, you can work your way back to my first podcast. What I have done in there is I've done a study on Ephesians, the book of Ephesians. That is the bulk of the podcast. And they're about 25 minutes long. So it's not like you're going to have to listen for an hour or 2 hours or something like that. They're about 25 minutes, give or take. And I've done some specific topics. I've taught on, God's will for your life, and some of the speaking in tongues. That's always a popular one, speaking in tongues, things like that. So I encourage you, if you have some Bible questions, I did a couple podcasts where we answered questions. So those are up. So you can access them at any time. Again, it's studyhiswordradio.org. Also, you can contact me. You can send me an email. I will answer it. I will answer questions if you have Bible questions, if you have comments on things I've said on this show or otherwise. You can email me, and you email me at, ready? It is studyhiswordministries@yahoo.com. studyhiswordministries@yahoo.com. So that's a way you can contact me, correspond with me, and that is my podcast that of the various teachings that I do is available for your listening. So again, I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon, and I hope you got one or two good little nuggets out of our covering Genesis. And I'll be back next week. I am going to have a guest next week, so you won't want to miss that. See you till next week.
You're listening to The Talking Place. Just listen to former star of The Jeffersons and 227, Marla Gibbs.
Where did the name Marla come from? That's so unique.